You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we swap genders every day because there's like 365 of them now. If you enjoy your trip, we'd really appreciate it if you tell a friend. Referrals are our number one source of tourism, or just hit us up with a 5-star review on iTunes. That really helps us raise among the travel agents. And I don't really know what that metaphor means, but I'm just going with it. And speaking of something else that I'm really not sure what it means, the other day, one of my friends from Clemson sent me an article from the Greenville newspaper, greenvilleonline.com. I think that's the Greenville newspaper. I don't really know. Greenville is a small town just outside of Clemson University, about 45 minutes. That's just outside in South Carolina because everything's so spread out. I suppose it's just outside in Los Angeles as well because everything within like 100 fucking miles is LA. But this article is from a guest columnist named Emily Blackshire. And she is a senior at Clemson University who will be graduating with a degree in language and international health this May. That's your first warning sign right there, right? Language and international health. I didn't know you could just have a degree in language. I'd be interested to look at that and see how it's similar to a writing degree or an English degree, but that's another discussion. But this article shows that social justice and virtue signaling have finally arrived fully in Clemson University. The basic thrust of this article is that Emily claims she loves Clemson University. That's how she starts out. I love you, Clemson, I love you. But this is not a typical love letter. It's not a typical love letter because, and that's her words, it's not a typical love letter. It's not a typical love letter because she doesn't love the Clemson culture. She doesn't love the culture of Clemson. According to her, it's not proactive and reactive enough. And I'm being very generous right now with her argument. She's basically saying the university doesn't take stances and speak out enough against racism and issues in the culture, such as the travel ban, the quote-unquote Muslim ban that the Trump administration did, because there was a whole story out there about a Clemson University student who couldn't get back in the culture, back in the country to go to school at Clemson, even though she's been here for a while. And she wanted the university to speak out on that, and she would also like to speak the university to speak out on its history of racial violence. And racial, I mean, violence is a tricky word. They're, you know, you're using violence in the social justice sense. Racism, basically. They're, she's saying, you know, the school was built on the backs of minorities. The old argument about the South and the old argument about America, that we built America on racism. And she's upset that Clemson, as a university, as a culture, doesn't acknowledge that. And this is a very long piece that needs to be edited, and is way too emotional. And I take major exception with this piece. I replied to it, and I was very polite with the way I replied to it. And I'm also going to be posting a link to this episode because this needs to be heard and understood. I take this very personally, and I take a lot of umbrage with it because Clemson is the first place to me that ever really felt like home. And Clemson is a very accepting place. I never saw racism when I was there. I saw a very accepting, open culture. And were things in the past bad in the South? Yes, but name me a place in the world, a country in the world, a culture in the world where things weren't bad in the past. Things are always progressing, things are always improving, and it pisses me off that people want to be stuck in the past because this is ultimately not about that. This is about controlling Clemson and turning it into something that it isn't. Ultimately, this is this girl virtue signaling to sound important. She's been so brainwashed in her degree of language and international health that this is how she thinks she has to portray her morality. Do not say that you love Clemson University and then turn around and say that you don't love the culture. A place is its culture. You do not love it if you're saying you don't like the culture, but you love it. This is a trick we see that the left has done for years about America. Oh, we love the United States of America, but we want to fundamentally change everything that it is. Fuck you. And fuck you, Emily, because I love Clemson, and I love Clemson for what it is. I'm sorry you spent 4 years at a place you didn't like. You want to know what? I did the same fucking thing. I went to Ithaca College. That was 4 years of this social justice nonsense between 2001 and 2005, before any of you knew what this fucking social justice bullshit was. Do I sit here and complain and write long screeds about how Ithaca College needs to change? No. I acknowledge that that's what Ithaca is. I got the value I got from it. And I value the friendships I have, and I have a small modicum of pride about the school because they did give me good some good stuff and some opportunity, but I don't try to change it because that's what Ithaca is at its core. Likewise, don't try to make Clemson into something it isn't, and don't say you love it when you don't. That is the biggest disingenuous piece of shit thing I've ever heard. I'm really glad you feel good that you got published laying all your emotions out there, if they're even real emotions. But you know what? Please leave us the fuck alone, all right? Finally, I am all in with Clemson. Let it be. If you don't like it, go the fuck somewhere else. Joining me this week, from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards. Daniel, clearly I've been ranting this week. What have you been doing this week?
Well, let me just say that Clemson is gorgeous, so...
Oh, dog, you're combining something I hate with something I love. My brain is exploding.
What have I been doing this week? I've been working my ass off. We have some changes going on where I work, so I've been working overtime to do a lot of good things that will result in more productivity down the road. And then also, what did I do? I did so much stuff around the apartment this week. I'm basically doing a complete redecoration, getting rid of couch, getting new couches, putting furniture together, hanging things on walls, rearranging bedroom. I feel like I adulted all weekend, to use a retarded phrase.
Yeah, and it sounds like you didn't have time to do ridiculous emotional virtue signaling screeds, right? Because when you're doing things, you don't have time to worry about this bullshit.
I just wonder why she has so much time on her free hand that she can sit down and write something so idiotic. If she was applying for jobs, or if she had a job, or if she was finishing up school, or if, I don't know, she had a quasi-serious hobby, she would not have time to sit down and type out this bullshit. Get on with your life, lady. Leave us alone.
And generally, I think that's true of a lot of these issues that we're seeing in our culture over the past year, and especially over the past few months. And that's why I want to focus on what we do when we open this show. What are we doing? And Midsiders out there, let us know what you're doing. We want to hear about that and celebrate it on the show as well. So let's bring in who else is joining us this week from the hills of white privilege, James Elias. James, what have you been doing?
Well, I have also been doing some chores lately.
Can we just like not talk about chores? Like, that's not good pod, okay?
It's great pod. You're the one who came up with the question. It's great pod.
Slightly interesting chores. I shouldn't have said chores. My friend Jay-Z and I tore down this shed made of sheet steel, and it was really awesome because we took the roof off, and then like we felt really powerful as we like bent it in half so it would get. We bent a roof made of steel in half, and then when we did, like, we both walked towards each other bending it like a sandwich, and then we like high-fived as we did it. So that was pretty, we felt really strong. It was just sheet steel though, so it really wasn't that hard, but that was
okay. Yeah. For the record, Daniel moving couches is chores. You took down a shed. That's not chore.
I put couches together. Thank you.
Those are hard.
Okay, you're okay. That's a little better. That's a little better. Were they IKEA couches?
Interesting. No. In the more interesting department, though, I'm really trying to figure out ways to monetize my math project right now, and I actually received a lot of good suggestions from friends on Facebook. I'm looking into making a YouTube channel of my own where I teach people how to become tutors. So that's in the brainstorming phase right now. But
I saw that post where you said, "Hello, I'm a tutor. How do I make more money doing less work?" I totally thought that was tongue in cheek. I didn't think that was serious.
I totally get why you thought that was a joke, but it's a very Tim Ferriss sort of thing. Like, it's like, okay, well, I don't want to have to work more, but I just want to be more successful. And I don't want to apply the duty premise and say, "Oh, just fucking work harder." Like, no, work smarter, be more innovative, be more efficient, add more value to the world. I was already on that path, but I was just looking for more ideas to make that, to make that process faster. I'm already charging $80 an hour tutoring. And that's up from, I started at $40 an hour. And so, like, I'm always, I've been growing in that respect, but I want to scale it further than just giving individual students help. Like, I want to do something along the lines of informing educational policy or training new teachers with all these ideas I've kind of accumulated over the years of tutoring individual students. So that's
it's a great idea. I think it'll come up with a great product, and we will definitely link to that on themidside.com. So whenever you come up with that, you can plug it on here, let our audience know, and we will link to that. So anyone who wants to check out that resource.
Thanks. Yeah.
I put together a chair too.
Did you film it?
No.
Oh, well, then how am I going to put it on the mid
14-year-old girl on Facebook? Normal shit?
Yeah, what else am I going to put on the mid-side YouTube channel?
Daniel, you should have
static.
You should have posted that video in the form of 60 Snapchat entries.
Oh god,
okay,
that's the
now
worst.
I'm putting on this leg. Now I'm putting on this leg. You probably need about 2 Snapchat entries for each leg.
It's true.
And then it takes 4 extra hours to do it.
That's right. But at least 3 people would have seen me do it.
All right, you know what else we link to on themidside.com? Mm-hmm. All the stories we cover and everything. So if you guys are looking for the trailers we watch and the news stories we talk about, you can find those on themidside.com if you're ever wondering what the stories are. So let's do it. Let's talk about the stories. It's time for the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Well, here we go again, gentlemen. WikiLeaks released a trove of CIA hacking documents this week in what is proving to be the largest leak in the agency's history. The documents are highly detailed and technical catalogs of tools that the CIA uses to spy on people, including a list of common computer tools that they can hack into to use for spying, like Skype, Wi-Fi networks, PDFs, even commercial antivirus programs used by millions of people to protect their computers. In one revelation that may especially trouble the tech world, this is from the New York Times, WikiLeaks said that the CIA and allied intelligence services have managed to compromise both Apple and Android smartphones, allowing their officers to bypass the encryption on popular services such as Signal, WhatsApp, and Telegram. According to WikiLeaks, government hackers can penetrate smartphones and collect audio and message traffic before encryption is applied in those apps. Unlike the National Security Agency documents that were leaked by Edward Snowden, these did not include examples of how the tools have been used against actual foreign targets. That could limit the damage, the CIA thinks, but the breach was incredibly embarrassing. And of course, everyone is asking, is the CIA reading my sexts to all these women? So, Justin, do you think the CIA is reading your sexts?
Yes! Maybe I'm a cynical motherfucker, but, like, I assume anything that's on a network is being accessed by the government.
Yeah.
Just fucking, like, dude, it's in their best interest to keep track of you. Because if somehow you end up being crazy, they have it on there, or they can do it ahead of time, or they can keep in line. Just, they would do it. That's how these people feed. They feed off of information. So, of course, they're going to get all the information that they can. I mean, is it a coincidence that this talked about that they can hack into cars and control them? And 2 weeks before this leak came out, there's an episode of Criminal Minds where some guy's hacking into cars and controlling them. And by the way, the only reason I even know that is because Leo was in the episode and I watched it. It was really bad. I wouldn't have watched it otherwise. But it is not a coincidence that that comes out 2 weeks before this leak happens. All I know is this. This was my takeaway from the story. Remember when we used to use Skype to record and every time we mentioned Roger Goodell, it would cut out? We have now inarguable proof that Roger Goodell was hacking our show.
That's right. I can see him sitting there with those headphones on, like in the Lives of Others, that movie about the Stasi, listening in for mentions of Deflategate and Tom Brady's balls.
We were the only people calling him out for what he was doing at first. It was in best interest to be against us.
That's right. I like to think that Roger Goodell spends an inordinate amount of time thinking about Justin.
Yeah. It would be more productive than what he usually does, to be fair.
Yeah, probably. So I want to be clear here that there is no actual evidence that these tools are being used against American citizens. And the CIA And the CIA isn't really the agency that goes after American citizens unless they're involved in some foreign plot against the country. It's really the NSA that does that kind of shit. We know they're listening. So,
right. So you think the CSA doesn't CSA, CIA, NSA, whatever. It's all the same fucking shit.
CSI.
Yeah. The CSI, whatever, the NCIS, the criminal minds, you think they don't just fucking like send their stuff to the NSA? You know, they've got a dank meme folders in CIA headquarters that they share with NSA. This is what the kids are memeing these days.
You know, it's, I'm not that cynical. One, because being in DC, I know how fucking territorial everyone is. So I imagine the CIA and NSA do not play nicely with each other, simply because that would mean that they would give up some modicum of power, and that's not a thing that people do here. But I don't know. I don't know enough about this to know if this is a bad thing. Like, don't we want like our Let's assume the CIA does its job properly. Okay, I know that's a stretch, but let's assume it. Do we not want them to have technology like this to spy on bad people? Isn't this a good thing that they have this kind of technology?
Yeah, you just have to accept that it's being used on you. I mean, I think it's great to be able to, think of it this way, right? They're ramming planes into buildings, right? Well, if one of them gets a car and they're trying to ram it into a building, don't you want the CIA to take it and make them crash somewhere else? I mean, that's a net good, right?
I'd prefer it, yes, yeah. Certainly.
That's a really good point, Daniel, because all this, I think a lot of people are going nuts, and they should be. Let me make that. I think they should kind of be going nuts. But to be objective about this, it's really worth noting, like what you said, this is a list of capabilities. It's not an admission of anything particular they've done with the tools, right? It's just a list of their tools. And the big thing is that, do you trust our current government to have these tools? I don't. I'm with Justin, where I assume anything I do online will be seen by someone, is my assumption. And some things I basically just say, that's a little weird that they saw that, but it isn't criminal, so.
Well, that's the best part of sending a dick pic, that you know some, like, fat, annoying guy is also looking at your dick, and it's hilarious.
I mean, but that's the thing, is that I don't think until I'm some kind of player in some type of person who influences the culture, I don't think I'm going to draw any attention. No one's going to be looking at me. I think about the fact that, isn't it true, correct me if I'm wrong, I seem to remember that it came to light that the FBI had a file on Ayn Rand. That's case? Yeah, I heard
again,
that
how is that a shock?
You know,
how is that a shock? You think they don't have a file on Kanye, on Kim Kardashian?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about that, but I think they definitely have a file on someone like Yaron Brooke, and it wouldn't surprise me if they had a file on Ayn Rand. What I'm saying, I am not worried about sort of de jure policy creating some kind of 1984 situation, at least not in the next 20 years. What I'm worried about is like what happens in House of Cards, where someone asks a backhanded favor of someone else, and now they have your information. So that basically I run under the assumption that if I ever become an important like cultural figure – everything that I've ever put into an electronic device will end up surfacing by people who are trying to attack my reputation. And so
what you're talking about,
I behave
James,
on the internet accordingly.
Goes back to the previous episode or a couple weeks ago when we talked about Milo and the deep state?
Yeah, exactly.
It raises questions about where this edited stuff came from, where everyone knew it existed for a year. Everyone will always have something on you because it's easy to pervert and twist things. And you're just, when you become a public figure in today's day and age, you're just waiting for somebody to call in that favor, and you're waiting to be a big enough fish that somebody's going to waste a favor on you. Daniel is correct. I agree with what he's saying. His point is very well taken when he says the government is not organized enough and they don't get along well enough to be doing these things to everybody and working together. That's why a 1984 is not possible. I'm just saying that if the tools are available, it's being used, and your point is 100% correct. One day, if you're big enough, somebody will come after you.
By the way, this is not just things you say directly into a computer or your phone or whatever. One of the leaks that I found particularly creepy and interesting is that there's a program called Weeping Angel, which uses Samsung smart televisions as covert listening devices. Basically, even when the TV is off and appears off, they can hack into it and listen to what's being said in your living room.
Isn't this what I said about Xbox?
That your Xbox is recording everything you say and sending it to that fat guy you were talking about at the NSA or CIA?
Yeah, because Microsoft said they were one of the first people to do that, right? And I was like, everybody, don't buy Xbox anymore. And everyone thought I was crazy.
Yes.
By the way, it's called Weeping Angel, so they named it after the Doctor Who villains, because they're always there and always watching.
That's right. And they attack when you turn away from them. That's kind of creepy, isn't it?
Oh, yes. That's a thing?
Yeah, it's a villain in Doctor Who.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, speaking of Doctor Who and British culture, I mean, that's the one way that we're like actually less scary. They have CCTV over there where they're fucking monitored all the time. Like, that's terrifying.
One last program that I wanted to take note of, especially for all those Donald Trump supporters out there, is there was a program named Umbridge, which is a library of cyber attack techniques that the CIA has collected from malware produced by other countries, including Russia. And basically, this combined with something else they do allows them to mask their operations so it looks like you've been hacked by Russians, basically. Dun, dun, dun!
Oh, wow,
DNC
conspiracy theories.
Hacked by CIA.
Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun. There it is, folks. It's all coming together now for Alex Jones. Really, I think he's the winner of this leak, Alex Jones. So, speaking of being winners, we're not them this week, because Berkeley is removing 20,000 free online videos of classroom content. But do you want to know why they're doing it, gentlemen? I think you do. It's not because it's too expensive to maintain or someone tripped over the power cord. No, it's to comply with an insane Department of Justice ruling. Yes, Berkeley's online library of more than 20,000 videos and lectures was found to violate the Americans with Disabilities Act because the content is not accessible to the hearing disabled community. Two employees at Gallaudet University, a school for the deaf in D.C., woo, go fighting deafies, filed a complaint with the DOJ, and after they investigated, they said, yes, either you have to make this content accessible with closed captioning and spend thousands and thousands of dollars to do that, or you have to remove it from public view. So that is what Berkeley has decided to do instead. Justin, what the fuck?
I didn't even know there was ADA compliance for websites until I started working for the company I'm working for, and I handle the website, and they were like, you need to make the website ADA compliant. And I was like, what the fuck? Like, how do you, like, I was like, handicap placards and parking, and like, what are you talking about? Like,
I'm
going
to
paint it blue?
The computer.
Yeah. Do you need an on-ramp? Like, but I looked and like, if there's video, you have to have closed captioning, and any picture that's on there, the alt text, so when you hover over it, it has to be descriptive, because people who are blind will have programs, they have plugins that read the alt text to them. So I had to spend all this fucking time, like, writing descriptions of every picture that's on the website. Like, it's just, if you're fucking disabled, you can't use the internet. I'm sorry. Like, if you can't see, like, we saw this with the Netflix thing, right? Where people were complaining there weren't versions of Daredevil for the viewing impaired, for the blind. Because, oh my God, it's a show about a blind person, so blind people can't see it. Like, you're just gonna fucking accept, like, I can't reach high counters. If there are things that are high, I can't reach them. Like, if you're blind and there's stuff to see, you can't fucking see it. Just accept it. This is, like, absurd. And this is, we're now anti, I mean, we see how anti-life and anti-intellectual this is. We're losing things at a school? We're taking it away?
Yes. I mean, what's particularly upsetting is, I mean, I understand, like, why it would be good for business to be ADA compliant, for instance. And maybe that should be encouraged and you should want to shop at places that are ADA compliant. Or, I'm sorry, not ADA compliant, just disability compliant, I'll say. Not that there should be a law. But at the same time, why do we have to make everyone essentially like the blind person who can't see this video if the blind person can't see this video? Why do we have to bring everyone down to a certain level in order to have equalization?
It's Harrison Bergeron.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Very much so. But I always like to bring that question up to the people supporting this kind of thing. It's like, do you really want to drag everyone down so to equal them out, as opposed to trying to bring other people up or encouraging them to do the right thing or offering solutions, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
The thing in this article that actually pissed me off the most was the last line, because it kind of, for me, demonstrates the misunderstanding that leads to this entire problem. It says, quote, "I can't imagine the authors of the ADD, the ADA, intended to destroy a valuable public resource because it wasn't perfectly accessible to all. But here we are, taking the quality out of equality. That's clumsy federal regulation for you," unquote. So what they're saying is that it's, oh, well, like, the purpose of the ADA was, you know, was, you know, benevolent, and it's just clumsy regulation. We need more complex regulation to apply to these nuanced situations and blah, 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 blah. But here's the thing. You can't regulate innovation. Innovation is by definition the new, and any kind of regulation you put on it, other than, you know, the barring of force, any regulation you put on it is going to ruin ruin innovation in that field. Think of, for example, right now it's a law that you have to pasteurize milk. But imagine if someone, you know, gave the cows a special treatment that made sure their milk is always safe no matter what, even if you don't pasteurize the milk. Well, too bad. You still have to fucking pasteurize. That innovation is now off the table because that's the rules. You have to pasteurize the milk. So you end up, whenever there's any kind of regulation whatsoever, it necessarily stifles innovation. There's no way to make the laws nuanced enough. And to me, it just goes to show me why, like, everyone recognizes how ridiculous this shit is, but without, like, abstract principles, you're never going to be able to correct the problem. You're going to keep charging towards it even though you hate it.
James, you're 100% correct, and what you've just revealed is the weakness of the right wing and the failure of the Republican Party and where they are, why they are where they are. I flipped that, inverted that. But they cannot fathom anyone not having the benevolence they have. And because of that, they allow these regulations to happen because they think, oh, they're good intentioned. But we've talked about this over the last year on this show. The left has this interpersonal hostility where everything is it's combative and everything is about getting one over on the other person, and the other person's out to get you, so you have to get them first. And they don't see that when they say, you know, oh, well, this ADA couldn't be possibly to hurt people. It can only be to help people who need help. And that's where we're at now in this country. And some people on the right are starting to realize it, but is it too late? And are they going to hear the message of how do you fix it? And as you just said, the only way to fix it is freedom.
Yeah, not only can you not make regulations precise enough to deal with innovation, since it's a contradiction in terms, but the regulations that are on the book are always used in an increasing scope, always. It is a law of government that they are used in increasing scope. So yes, maybe this sort of thing wouldn't have fallen under the ADA Act when it was written, but the idea is, how can we expand these powers to give the government more control? That's what bureaucrats are always working on. One of the examples now is, of course, the idea that Christian bakers, for instance, are forced by the Civil Rights Act to bake cakes for gay people. No one who wrote the Civil Rights Act would have ever fathomed that that would have been a thing, would have included it, and it had nothing to do with that. It had to do with allowing black people to go to businesses and allowing their children to go to schools, etc. But now we can use it to force people who disagree with certain other people, their quote-unquote lifestyle, even if that's a dumb way to think about it, we can use it to force them to serve them cake. So where does the Americans with Disabilities Act go from here? I mean, exactly as Justin said earlier, like, he can't reach certain shelves. Is that now, does that fall under ADA compliance? I'm curious.
Yeah, I'm disabled.
That's right.
I mean, they should build a certain number of apartments in every complex, a certain number of houses that are for me.
That's right. Or they should have to provide you with moon shoes. So yes, you can jump and reach anything.
Also, they should stop people discriminating based upon height on online dating.
That's right. Absolutely. And by the way, in places like Illinois, who have classifications of disabilities such as, quote, low potential for income, unquote, how does that conform with the Americans with Disabilities Act? Yes, you can be disabled in Illinois if you have a low potential for income, which I believe is politically correct parlance for fucking stupid. So I'm curious as to how that
every child has.
Yes, I'm curious how that fits in with the Americans with Disabilities Act. So these things just expand and expand and expand. But you know what's not expanding, in fact?
My penis, because of this next story.
Tinder's user base the other day shrunk by one, as Tinder, for the first time ever, publicly named a person who they have banned for life from their service. In a blog post on the official Tinder blog called In Commemoration of National Pig Day, the service called out user named Nick, who they banned for life after he said racist things and sexist things to a woman who didn't respond to him. So this guy was later called out specifically on social media by friends of the woman he called sexist and racist things, and she shared his actual messages with the world and his name. We won't name him, I don't think, even though the article will, but his name is Nick. He's 24. He's 6'2". Literally the first thing he puts in his profile is he's 6'2", Justin.
Wait, why does he put in his profile?
That's literally the first thing he put in his profile.
What do you mean they all do that? Are you kidding me?
I don't know. I haven't dated in a while. It's just insane.
Dude, online dating is all about height. Like, if you put your... I don't put my height, because if you put it, they immediately swipe left on you.
It's interesting.
Girls will put in there, they'll be like, I'm 5'10 in heels. So they judge what... They're not wearing heels 90% of the time, and they're judging what guys they want for the 10% of the time they're wearing heels.
Hmm. Fight the patriarchy.
I'm asleep 10% of the time. Please be a narcoleptic.
So the conversation started off well. He invited her to a movie, and he said he lived in San Francisco. And then he gave out his address, and she said, do you normally give out your address so freely? And he replied, lol, yes, ? I love the conversation here. And she replied, I see, with an extra E. But just one extra E. Not like I see, you know, like multiple extra E, whatever. And so then his reply, showing what's important in dating, is, I'm a 6'2" guy that works out. What's going to happen? And here's where it goes downhill, because she doesn't respond. All been there, right, guys? He starts to have that panicked banter with himself where he just writes lol, and that's the only thing he writes. And then If I was a girl, maybe I wouldn't. Why does it matter? Question mark. You say that if it's just I did something wrong, dot, dot, dot. Question mark. And then it escalates rather fucking quickly. He says, you chinks are all the same, E-E-E. Trolling her. Such a waste of time, rolly eyed emoji. Next time, don't give out your number, dumb. See you next Tuesday. Slightly dark brown middle finger. P.S.
The race of the middle finger counts.
That's right. P.S. You look like you'd melt in the heat, wear less makeup, side laughing face, regular standing up laughy face crying.
I love your ADA use of these emojis.
Yeah.
Had to make the show compliant.
Yeah, it's a good touch.
So, there you have it. He said those things to her, and then in response, Tinder banned him for life and publicly shamed him. None of the other public is shaming him. And this article that we get from thoughtcatalog.com basically says, let's have all of a moment of silence for Nick's love life, which will hopefully forevermore be non-existent. So, wow. Gentlemen, what say you about the consequences of this man's stupid and terrible actions? Justin?
I mean, the consequences are way overblown here. I mean, yeah. Tinder, it's a text message. He's not on Tinder when he's saying these things. So, like, can I not go to McDonald's because, like, I eat a burger somewhere else? Like, I don't, it just doesn't make sense to me. Like, I understand it's a private company. They can ban whoever they want for every fucking reason they want. I understand. But ultimately, this comes from this culture that favors women, and nobody wants to acknowledge that. Look, I'm not defending what the guy said, but let's be serious. He said one racial slur, and he said one bad word. He said a cunt. He called this woman a cunt. You know what? Emily, the girl who wrote the thing from Clemson, she's a cunt, okay? Should my Clemson degree be taken away for saying that? No. What they're not recognizing is how frustrated this guy is. He's frustrated because if you look at the statistics in online dating, you know how infrequently guys get matches even if they're attractive? And then when you get matches, they don't message you. And then if they do give you your number, they disappear for no reason? Now, granted, she disappeared because his comment was a little, you know, socially awkward to be like, I'm 6'2", working out, what's going to happen? Like, that's not the best way to pursue a woman, right? That's not the best way to be like, hey, you want to fuck? Like, you're better off just saying, hey, you want to fuck than saying that. Like, just be a man and say that. But for her to just disappear, that's the callousness women have towards men because they have so many options because the culture favors them. I mean, not even talking about online dating. I was out with Dan and then our friend Dan one night, and they told me, get this girl's number. I did. I've texted her, she's disappeared, then she's texted me to say she's not blowing me off, then she doesn't reply anymore, and it's like, I get go signals, then I get stop signals, and it's like, the only recourse I have to maintain any sort of respectability and to not have my life be blown up is to just ignore it and pretend it never happened. But then where's the line as a guy between standing up for yourself and going after what you want and just not knowing if a woman's interested or not? Because that's what it ultimately comes down to. As guys, we don't know what a go signal is and a stop signal is, so we say dumb shit like, I'm 6'2 and work out, what's going to happen? Then you don't know what the response is going to be. It's probably going to be negative, so just say whatever the fuck you want. And then we demonize men for it, and we say masculinity is toxic and evil, and we end up here. It's just the whole thing is so fucking fucked up and perverse.
Indeed, I think I just want to expand a tiny bit on one of the points from your start, which is that...
No, I'm course, perfect.
I said expand. Which is, of course, Tinder can choose who they want on their platform. That's perfectly fine. But what's particularly frightening to me about this story is not that this guy is no longer going to be on Tinder, but that what you sort of said, which is that this was through a Facebook message, or I'm sorry, a text message. And... what companies are going to moderate and look into what communication methods in the future to decide if you get to use them? For instance,
it's not just if you get to use them. They're saying he shouldn't be allowed to date and fuck anymore because he pissed off this one girl.
Yes, the culture is saying that. Tinder is not in particular saying that, but the culture, yes, that's an even bigger consequence that I was getting to. But the idea of, like, is Uber going to monitor what I say on Facebook or Twitter? And if I say something they deem bad, am I no longer going to be allowed to use Uber? How about Safeway? How about Alpha Pie House downtown, who serves a mean key lime pie? Are they going to be monitoring my text messages? And if someone shares something that I say that's repulsive to Alpha Pie House, am I no longer going to get that sweet pecan on Sundays?
The Uber example is great. So say you become friends with an Uber driver outside of Uber, and then you text them and you say, hey, I'll give you a fare if you come pick me up now. And you do that a little bit, and then they just stop responding to you one day, and they never come pick you up again. And you're like, what the fuck, you dumb cunt? Like, come pick me up. Can you get banned from Uber? Like, what the fuck, you dumb cunt? Why are you not letting me use your service anymore? Do you get what I'm saying?
So by picking up, you mean BJ, right?
Yeah, I mean, if that's how you're an Uber user, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. That's certainly a different Uber service than I'm getting.
So. Yeah. Is that Uber X? Is that Uber XXX?
That's Uber Black. Oh, no, Black is the normal one.
Oh, Uber Black was what I thought you were just ordering giant cocks.
Yeah, right. Well, right. But what really bothers me about this is I don't know how I feel about this yet, but there appears to be a hint of vigilante mob justice going on here where...
A hint?
This guy... What's that?
There's a hint. You're saying there's only a hint.
Yeah, okay. There's the full-blown, you know, evidence of vigilante... No, I'm saying there's a hint of it because it's not exactly vigilante justice. Here's the way in which it is. This guy says something rude, but here's the fucking thing. When you're frustrated, I don't know. Like, I would challenge anyone to say that they are comfortable with someone posting them at their worst moment. Imagine you get cut off in traffic. You've had a shitty day, shitty work, shitty everything today, and you fucking, you know, racial slur. You see, you know, a person of a particular race cut you off. Or
I've taken to calling people who do shit to me in cars faggots now. So I get what you're saying.
Yeah,
I'll just be like, look at this faggot.
Yeah, and like I just imagine you at your most heated, irrational moment, and you blow off steam in a way that generally it's words. Okay, people, it's words. It's not hurting people that badly. I'm not saying it's okay, but I challenge anyone to be comfortable with their most frustrated, irrational moment being paraded around on the internet. Now, here's where it gets a little complicated. For this guy, a bunch of women started coming forward, and it turns out he does this a lot. But the thing is that I'm extremely uncomfortable with the fact that as far as Tinder knew, he did this once and they posted it. And then that's what triggered a bunch of other women coming forward and saying, oh, yeah, I received the same treatment from him. So it sounds like this guy is actually an asshole. But the thing is that Tinder didn't know that. So there seems to be this kind of mob justice in the form of your personal reputation being tarnished in public off of your worst moment that in a thoughtless fit of frustration one day you treated someone badly, and now that is your prestige, that is your, you know, public view for everyone to see now. There seems something to be just something incredibly unjust about it. On one hand, he did do something wrong, but on the other hand, it's just completely this response ends up being completely out of proportion in the way they're conducting this kind of justice.
I agree completely, right. But there's even another level of the lack of justice here that I really want to hit on, and it's the gender thing I'm talking about. And it's the women have a certain power. Psychologically, right? So women fear men because we tend to be stronger than them. Well, women have a psychological power that we don't have, right? We see this, you know, in Snyder's works, the way he shows the relationship between a boy and his mother, right? We see the relationship between Lois and Clark and the way that really helps Clark, you know, fight for his values in Batman versus Superman. Snyder really nails that psychological power women have over men. So when women have this habit of ghosting men just because a man says one minuscule thing they don't like, when are you ever going to have a perfect conversation with someone the first time you talk to them? There's always going to be miscommunication when you're establishing a new rapport. And what he said, again, was not elegant. When he said, I'm 6'2 and work out, what's going to happen? That is not elegant. But that is an asshole, and that is a cunt maneuver to not reply at all. Even if she had just said, I'm not interested anymore, goodbye, or she just said, I'm not interested anymore, that's a fine move to say that. You have every right to say that. But to just disappear, that's inconsiderate, and it ignores the power that women have psychologically.
After the first three times when I was dating, where I went out with a date, on a date with a woman, thought I had a perfectly great time with them, paid for dinner, etc., and then never heard from them again, ever. I started doing something very different at the end of dates, which is that if I wasn't interested in a girl at the end of the day, I only had to do this twice, I remember when I was dating. But at the end of the date, you know, talking to the girl before we parted, I would say to her face, you know, I had a great time tonight, but I just don't think we should see each other again. And you know how fucking uncomfortable that is? But at the same time, it's incredibly important, and it was important for me to establish how I felt about women, and I think it was important for them, so I'm not leading them on either. And that's all I'm asking. That's all anyone should be asking for from each other, is open and honest communication, regardless of your gender.
Right.
James, to your point about this mob mentality kind of thing, this does remind me of like a modern day sort of posse comitatus on the internet, which I know you're all familiar with this obscure legal term. But basically,
I was going to say, like, I was like, is that from a John Wayne movie?
Yes, actually it is. From many John Wayne movies. It's, you know, when someone says gather my posse, it comes from the term posse comitatus, which is the concept of like a local authority can gather a group of people to enact justice. Like,
where was legally. This on the posse edition, Daniel?
I didn't even think about it until now. It's a common law thing. But really, on the internet, with all these women gathering to take down these men, it's more of like modern pussy comitatus, really.
Ah, so. That's good. That's so good.
Thank you, Daniel.
So good.
That was a long way for a joke that's super fucking obscure and 9 people are going to get. But fuck you, I made it.
I don't even want this to be a joke, though. We need to coin this term and identify it. I mean, this is like when you call people out on virtue signaling, right?
To the Urban Dictionary.
Yeah. We're gonna make this happen. What is it? Pussy?
Comitatus.
Pussy comitatus. We need to start identifying things of this nature.
Did you just say pussy, tatas?
Pussy, come on your tatas.
Pussy, tatas.
No, pussy, come on your tatas.
That's right. We're taking this in a direction I didn't intend.
I like it how you have this nice legal Latin pun that you give us, very Shakespearean, and we're talking about coming on tatas now. It's gone to that.
We can't disappoint his mother.
That's right.
That's right.
Oh, my mother. We'll tell that story another time. Yeah. But in the meantime, speaking of pussy comitatus, what if Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton had swapped genders? This was a question that intrigued some NYU professors. And so they basically put together a verbatim play of one of the debates where everything is exactly the same. The words, the hand gestures, the setup, the articulation, except that all they did was they made Donald Trump a woman and they made Hillary Clinton a man. And they played this out to the audience. Of course, the thinking here is that, you know, Trump's aggression would be less tolerated in a woman, for instance. That people would hate the woman even more because she's a woman. You know, things like that. But what really happened was fucking fascinating. This is from the article on NYU's website. Many were shocked to find that they couldn't seem to find in the male Hillary Clinton named Jonathan Gordon what they had admired in Hillary Clinton. Or that Brenda King, the female Trump, her clever tactics seemed to shine in moments where they'd remembered Donald Trump flailing or lashing out. For those Clinton voters trying to make sense of the loss, it was by turns bewildering and instructive, raising as many questions about gender performance and the effects of sexism as it answered. Furthermore, before we get into it, what some of the responses were, the professors say, for instance, we heard a lot of, now I understand how this happened, meaning how Trump won the election. People were super upset. They had to be comforted. One person said, I'm just so struck by how precise Trump's technique is, for instance. Another, a musical theater composer, actually said that Trump created hummable lyrics. While Clinton talked a lot and everything she said was true and factual, but there was no, quote, hook to it. Another theme was about not liking either candidate. You know, quote, I wouldn't vote for either one of these people. And someone said that the male Hillary Clinton was, quote, really punchable because of all of her stupid smiling. Justin, this is like Midside Gold.
Yes, I enjoy the fact that they had to do this study to get to where I always am. Like, literally, that paragraph you just read sounds like me, does it not? Like, I wouldn't vote for any of them, but, you know, Trump's technique is good, and I want to punch Hillary Clinton in the face. Doesn't that pretty much sound like the essentialized, distilled version of my election analysis?
Yes. Note to all professors of any discipline at any school, the need for studies is now over. Just ask Justin, and you will receive reality. You will directly receive reality.
Yes, that 100%. That is what we learned there. This is the value of the midside. This is everything we've been saying. I mean, this story, I mean, it's the last story too, right? Well, Think about the attack on masculinity. Trump does these things and we don't accept it, but a woman does it and all of a sudden we accept it and realize how good it is. That's only because you don't like the fact that he's masculine. But on the other side, look at the double standard. A male acts the way you want him to act. He acts like Hillary Clinton and you don't like him anymore. We can't win as guys.
Yeah, you're damned with a dong and damned without a dong.
Yeah.
Watching this, first of all, the clip that they showed didn't provide enough context of the actual policy for me to make up my mind about. Usually I hate both candidates just because everything they say just philosophically is just rife with so much bullshit reasoning that I just hate both people regardless of their delivery. But I was just able to sort of, because I didn't understand the context of what they were saying in this short clip, I was able to just look at their delivery, and I found the woman to be kind of like, oh, hey, she's an interesting, bombastic kind of lady. And I wonder if there is sort of an anti-male bias. I definitely have a bias in favor of sort of assertive women, personally. Mm-hmm. Whereas the dude came off as just any other politician, really. And so, of course, punchable face, you know, don't trust him, says a bunch of words. Yeah.
That's the point, though, James. Hillary Clinton is any other politician. That's the point.
Yeah, she's got a vagina under there. That's the only difference. Correct. You don't even see it.
And I love assertive women, too. I like that. I love assertive, intelligent women. But the thing you said is, that was my reaction to Trump during the election, what you just said. Oh, this guy is a bombastic, interesting person. You can't deny that that's what Trump is. There's a reason he became a reality TV personality.
Yeah, I actually fell into the paradigm of this, too. I mean, watched the video. I definitely liked the woman Trump better than actual Trump. Maybe it's – I don't know. I don't know what it's due to. But and to pile on, I also like assertive women. Have any of you met my wife? And the guy – now, here's the interesting thing for me. Hillary Clinton, to me, always came off as bitchy. And when you say that, it's like, oh, my God, that's the most sexist thing anyone could ever say.
No, she is a bitch.
And – the guy in this video who is playing Hillary Clinton came off as bitchy.
Yeah.
It's the mannerisms. It's what is being said. And it doesn't matter if it's a man or woman. It comes off as bitchy.
Well, I think that's the biggest thing that struck people. And I think that's why they were having these cognitive dissonant reactions, according to the study reporter, is because when you take away Hillary Clinton's gender, it's obvious why Trump was so disrespectful to her. And when you take away her gender and you watch this and you see somebody who's not Trump doing it to Hillary or doing it to not Hillary, you're like, oh, shit, that's why he did that. She kind of deserved that. She kind of had it coming. It doesn't mean you like Trump, but it's just sort of like,
oh, now why he was doing it made sense. And that's what I said the whole fucking election. He's just rallying the people who hate Hillary and treating her the way she deserves, because nobody's fucking treating her the way she deserves to be treated.
Yeah.
Well, you got to remember, Trump is he's way past four-dimensional chess at this point. He's in like six-dimensional string theory Go. No one knows how to play Go. Think of like a game that's a combination of Risk and Go, which no one knows how to play either of those games. He's playing the string theory 12-dimensional version of that. Remember, that's how high-level Trump is, and that's how he's using this charm, and he's rallying the troops against Hillary. All of this, just he has full understanding of your mind. Just remember that.
I have a better analysis of Trump. This is one that Justin will appreciate because of our background in rhetoric, is that I think Trump is not a master strategist. And I think James is being tongue-in-cheek, although I don't actually know. But we'll find out in a moment.
I can't tell if he's quoting Scott Adams or not.
I'm quoting Scott Adams, just exaggerating his stupid point. I have a feeling I'm going to agree with what you're about to say, Daniel.
I think Trump has no strategy. Trump has become the master of what Aristotle called the enthymeme. The enthymeme is one of the most powerful forms of argument, because you basically have a couple premises, but you leave out a whole bunch of premises, and then you come to a conclusion that some people agree with, and then a bunch of people can put in their own premises that they think you said because you came to that conclusion, and thus you seem like a master. You seem like a masterful rhetorician because people are putting in their own premises. And so I'm not looking at this exactly like an argument, but what I'm saying is that Trump has no strategy, but what he has mastered is making people think, wait, does he have a strategy? Is this what he's doing? I think this is what he's doing. And thus people like Trump because it's confirming their own bias, because he's seemingly doing exactly what they think he's doing when in fact he's not doing a fucking thing.
Right. And James, that's essentially what Scott Adams is saying too.
Yeah, right. Scott Adams has fallen for this or whatever the fuck you just said in Greek. My mind is blown right now, Daniel.
No. Scott Adams hasn't fallen for it. He's essentially saying what Daniel just said. He makes that argument. He just makes it in a more complex way. You did say it better. You said it much better. You said it much clearer.
Psychologically, like, Adams is completely wrong in evaluating Trump. Trump has no actual skills. He's just an animal who's been trained in the arena of pleasing people in his immediate vicinity with a man's mind who's learned to do that particular skill really well. He doesn't think, he doesn't have ideas, he's just really good at manipulating other people in there at times when they're not thinking, basically. And I agree with you, Daniel, it takes on the form of this skill, because it turns out that that's the pattern that ends up working well. I don't think Trump is at all aware of what it is he's doing. He's just saying whatever it is he thinks will please the people around him in the immediate moment.
I mean, I think it's sort of like a football player who isn't well coached, where he's just sort of done things that he's learned has worked over time, and he isn't aware of why he's doing it, but he is doing it on a certain level because it works. Do you get what I'm saying?
I agree. But the football player is going to have conscious thought about some of what he's doing. He's going to notice this works, this doesn't, this works, this doesn't. I don't think Trump has any strategy. Like, I agree with you. Like, yeah, it's just take away any conscious thinking, and that is Trump's. He has no like game plan.
Right. He has no strategy, but he has a tactic. He does.
Yeah. With no end in sight, with right. No particular thing he's trying to achieve.
Well, his end is emotionalist. His end is to feel good.
Exactly.
And yet,
yeah.
The entire audience can look at him and think, I bet you this is what he's doing.
Yeah.
And thus you have a country of 300 million experts in Trump who know what he's doing, and it makes them all feel better about themselves for knowing what he's doing. And that helps you pick up a fuck ton of votes.
Yep. 100%. And you know what
else
helps?
Brilliantly stupid. Sorry, go ahead.
That's okay. I was going to transition. Are we ready for that?
Let's do it.
All right. Justin's a woman now. Congratulations.
I'm what now?
A woman.
That was good, especially in the gender swap edition. I applaud that. Well done. You know what else I don't applaud, though? I don't applaud the critics and their praising of a movie this week. Let's head into a couple reviews in The Hopeful Romantic with... JML. Really quickly, I want to review Kong Skull Island, and then I want to talk about Logan a little bit more in depth. James, you saw Logan, correct?
I did, yeah.
Okay, so this will be an interesting test to see how you responded to Logan. So before we do that, though, I want to talk about Kong Skull Island, because I don't know what it's sitting at right now, but it was at around 80% on Rotten Tomatoes.
79.
That was going to be my guess. And so what am I, -1 on the Rotten Tomatoes game right now?
That's right. Yeah. 1 point off. Almost had that 5-point deduction.
Oh, you gain 5 points if you get it spot on?
If you get it head on, you get a -5, yes.
Ah, yeah. I thought it was 79, but I didn't know 100%, so I just said 80. But anyway, it's sitting at 80%. I saw this Tuesday night at a free screening because I'm somehow on a WB list because I was like, let me see Batman versus Superman Ultimate Edition at theaters, but they didn't let me, so I think they feel bad for me. So I get to see free movies sometimes, and I saw this movie for free. This movie is a horrible movie. There is one good thing about this movie, and it's the CG Kong fighting the CG dinosaur thing at the end. That is pretty cool. But there's two things that are really wrong with this movie. The first is the plot slash characters are completely underdeveloped. There's no character development, and there is almost no plot. And part of the reason there's almost no plot is there's too many fucking characters to actually do things. There's one character in the movie, this Asian woman scientist, who I swear to God is only put in to have Corey Hawkins' character talk to. Where, because at one point he goes off on his own, and I swear to God they were writing the script and they were like, we can't just have this guy talk to himself. So they went back and added her character throughout the script. She has like no lines, and all she does is like respond to him and like nod. It's like, I don't even know, like if there's one thing you're going to get upset about Asians, that she's like a subservient. It's like awful. She's a subservient. It's just really bad. And then plot wise, the characters are just like, you cut to a scene and they like say some expositional thing. And then you cut to another scene, it's an expositional thing. And the worst part about this movie is its Avatar influences. Dan, this movie would make you so angry. The whole thing is it takes place after Vietnam and Samuel L. Jackson's character is I don't remember his rank, but he's leading his group in the military. This is their first mission post-Vietnam before they go back to the country. And they have to take care of the scientists and the photographers. And he is anti-nature. So even though King Kong is protecting the humans on the island from the skull crushers and the evil dinosaurs and everything, he wants to kill King Kong because he says, quote, and you see this in the trailers, let's show Kong that man is king. And also, there is a group of people living on the island who are described as having moved beyond war and sickness and possibly they're immortal. But you know how they live on the island? They live in fucking huts. But because they're a community where they all look the same and they don't fight and they let Kong protect them, that's supposed to be the ideal way of living. So this movie is anti-human, and it's poorly made.
79% reminder that Batman vs. Superman was 27%. So,
well, that's what we've seen in the past few weeks. Get Out had 99%. This has 79%. And Batman vs. Superman had 27%. You're going to tell me these critics aren't in the tank for certain ideas? And you're going to tell me these critics aren't organized?
Yeah. Looks insane. I would say that I haven't seen this movie, but I would say that the only kind of even moderately cool thing about this movie is that it was actually shot in Vietnam. And I think it's the first movie to be shot in Vietnam since the Vietnam War.
Well, yeah, the backdrop is nice. I mean, that's nice. And I mean, they have good talent in it. I mean, John Goodman's in it. John C. Reilly does well in what he's given. I mean, Sam Jackson's in it. Corey Hawkins is a good young actor. So they have good talent in it. And, you know, like you said, the background's good. And you have to say the CG for Kong is good. And seeing Kong fight the giant monster is cool. If that had been the movie, I would have enjoyed it. But I don't want to sit through all the other shit to see Kong rip out the innards of the skull crusher. I don't want to see that. Yeah, the dinosaur is the word I'm looking for. And, like, I mean, there's even Brie Larson's character is literally a peacenik photographer, journalist, and she literally has a confrontation earlier with Sam Jackson in the movie where they say the two sides about Vietnam, and Sam Jackson's character said, oh, we didn't lose, we just didn't fully commit our forces. So they have now made evil associated with the idea that we could have won the Vietnam War. Even though the proper analysis of the Vietnam War is that we didn't win because we didn't fully commit our forces, that's now evil to think that. The villain said that.
Hmm. Okay. Good thing I will never see this movie.
Yeah, don't. But every once in a while, a movie comes along that's legitimately good that the critics give a good score. Logan is sitting at, like, I think 91%. Did I get my 5-point deduction?
What did you say, 95?
I said 91.
Oh, it's 92.
Damn it, I was going to say 92 and I underplayed it. Come on, man. Logan is sitting at 91% on Rotten Tomatoes. 92, sorry. I wanted my 5-point deduction. It's sitting at 92%. For those of you who don't know, Logan is Hugh Jackman's final turn as Wolverine. This movie is basically a Western. What it is this guy who is isolated from society and very broken and hurt, living on his own, taking care of his father figure who's very sick and dying, and he's driving basically Uber with a limo. So he's driving Uber Black. So can you imagine calling Uber and getting Wolverine showing up? And it's filmed in along the Mexican border. So there is, and this is probably why it's getting good reviews, there is a subtle theme of immigration here, and it's a subtle pro-immigration theme, which obviously I'm okay with because I'm for open borders. So I'm pro-immigration, but that's not the main point of the movie. The main point of the movie has to do with love and family and fighting for your values and the value of actually having people who are similar to you and share your experience in your life. So what happens is, you know, he's taking care of Professor X, who's really sick, and this woman finds him, and she's like, you have to take care of this little girl. And as it turns out throughout the movie, this little girl is his daughter who was cloned from his genetics, and her and a bunch of other children were made into be weapons, basically. So he's Weapon X. Well, these are like the X-23 program. And he finds out through the movie about caring for her and actually learning to love her and admitting his love for Patrick Stewart's character, Professor X. And that's what the whole movie becomes about. It's a road trip Western movie where these people are chasing him and he's trying to bring the girl to freedom in a very John Wayne-esque way, very similar to The Searchers almost, sort of an inverse of that, where rather than him searching for someone, they're searching for him. And, you know, the X-23 girl is subbing in for Natalie Wood in a way that inverts that. And it's just all about him learning the value of loving the daughter and actually having a daughter and accepting her into his life. And for me personally, I thought it was very well done. It looks like a Western. It looks like a modern Western. And the writing is very good. I was very happy with how they executed the end. I'm not sure I want to spoil it. So James, maybe let's hold off on spoiling it. We can talk about it generally. And I thought the acting was tremendous. I think that both Patrick Stewart and the young girl are deserving of a Oscar nomination for Best Supporting Actor and Actress. They were that good. I was very moved by it. I was very moved by this movie. I thought it was excellent. James?
Yeah, I agree with everything, like, just on your objective evaluation of the movie. It was a really good movie. It had a few, like, side comments. There was some weird side comment about the corn. I don't even really remember what it is, but I could tell they were throwing some kind of liberal crap in there. Do you remember what he was saying about the corn? They're like, where they say they see these machines and they say something like, oh, government capitalism, bad.
It was unclear about why the corn was being genetically modified, but that was the point, was that, like, because this was set in the year 2029, so all the X-Men are dead and there are no more mutants being born anymore. And they're all technologies, like the corn was being genetically modified somehow. And there were auto trucks on the road, which are trucks that drive themselves. And those trucks almost kill Wolverine in his car. So there is some stuff like that that could be anti-progress, but I don't think the world was fleshed out enough to know, right? Because we know in today who regulates the corn and says you have to have it a certain way. This is what you were talking about with the pasteurized cows, the pasteurized milk. It's the same thing. So conceivably the government could require the corn to be made a certain way. I don't think that that could be interpreted either way. I don't think there's enough evidence within the film itself.
Well, I'm guessing that the writers of the film didn't have libertarian economics in mind when talking about GMOs.
That's fair.
I mean, but that's a side issue. That's just kind of that. I don't know. It's almost not even worth mentioning. The setting I was unclear on, like, why is it all the X-Men die? They imply that all of the X-Men died because of a particular reason, and I wasn't clear on what that was.
Well, I think we can spoil that. You know, that reason is because Professor X is sick. I almost said Professor Sex because Professor X is sick. Because he is sick and he has some degenerative brain disorder, it causes him to have seizures, and when he has the seizures, it affects all the people in the vicinity, in like, you know, a couple miles. And if it goes on, if the seizure goes on long enough, he basically kills them because humans can't withstand it. And Wolverine and X-23 are only able to handle it because of their healing factors and adamantium that's been grafted onto their bones. So that's why Wolverine survives. So basically one of these seizures happened at the X-Mansion in Westchester, and he killed all the X-Men unintentionally. Oh. And that's why Wolverine is the one who has to take care of Professor X. And I actually liked that they didn't spell it out, and it was sort of a subtle thing that is what they had been through.
Dumb.
A reason they don't spell that out. I didn't like that either, and that pertains to the fact that I think this was a well-done movie, but just all of it just felt so empty. Like Wolverine is so repressed and so cognitively cut off from his values. You don't get to feel. I just never felt like I got to feel anything. Like he does have a moment where he acknowledges the value that Professor X has for him and he does learn to value this little girl, but it's all so stifled and cut off. There's not enough. It's like eating a well-done steak. Like I'm about to see it. I'm like, oh my God, yes. And I bite into it. And it's like, no, it's about a fourth of what I expected. Like emotionally, as far as just the visceral experience of feeling. And that was just really but the thing is I think that's just kind of a sense of life issue I just wanted more passion.
I think there's a few things about that.
Like Wolverine, this would be very meaningful. Someone who really feels that way and is a little bit, like if Malcolm Reynolds from Firefly watched this, I feel like he'd really like it.
Well, I mean, that's right to one of the points I was going to make. And it's the first part is this is Wolverine's character. That's part of why he is that way. The second thing is what you just said. Malcolm Reynolds is also a Western hero. So part of this is stylistically what a Western is. If you look at John Wayne's character in The Searchers, his character is very similarly stifled in that way and keeps to himself in that way. It's because of all the trauma he's been through fighting in the wars and defending things. And that's the way Wolverine is in this movie as well. I mean, that's part of a lot of what that's what he's been his whole life, right? Because look at how he was traumatized when he was made to be Weapon X and what he was made to go through. And he's never had a family or anything. So that's definitely intentional. And that's definitely why they went with the Western. But I do agree with you, especially at the beginning of the movie, that it's very difficult because Wolverine is very one note and Hugh Jackman's not given a lot to do. And Patrick Stewart carries the picture for that point of the movie. But there's a certain point where the movie turns and it's when they get on the road. And I'd almost say it's the Oklahoma City where they're at the Harrah's Casino. That might be where it turns. I don't know the precise point, but the movie turns and he starts being more emotive and playing things with more complexity. And I think it's a much better movie from that point on because of what you're saying.
I have a question.
Yes.
You don't have to tell me the answer to this question on air, although I will ask you later. Just tell me if they answer this question. Mm-hmm. This is set in 2029.
Mm-hmm.
That's like not that far in the future in the X-Men universe. Why is Wolverine old? Do they answer that question?
Yeah, and I'll answer that question for you. And that's another thing they answer subtly, where it's through the movie. They're like, you're dying, Logan. Something inside of you is killing you. And he sees a doctor at one point, and the doctor's like, no, you have to go to the hospital and, you know, figure what's going on. And he's like, no. And the doctor says, oh, just stay here. I'll figure it out. Just let me run some tests. And he says, no. And at the end of the movie, it's revealed that the adamantium has been slowly poisoning him throughout his whole life. And it's
dumb.
Made it so his healing factor doesn't work anymore.
Dumb. I reject this movie outright for being dumb.
Why is that dumb?
He's a mutant whose body heals itself. His power is that basically nothing can kill him, including direct bullet shots to the fucking head, because his body heals so fast that it can't kill him, and his body heals so fast that it can't age. His body would heal whatever the adamantium poisoning is. That is inconsistent with Wolverine as a character in the universe, as he's known always.
Well, they basically made it they made an unkillable character then, because if you can't decapitate him and nothing can kill him, then he can't ever die, and he'll live forever. So even when the Earth explodes or the sun goes supernova, there'll just be Wolverine floating in space.
That's part of the psychological torture of Wolverine. That's part of his character and what he goes through. He was alive during the Civil War.
Okay, so you're not willing to accept that this is just a different story they're telling?
No, I think this is a dumb story. I think this is a story that destroys the character of Wolverine. So no, I'm not willing to accept it. I will never see it. As far as I'm concerned, I'm sticking my fingers in my ear saying this never happened. La 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 la. Fuck this movie.
All right, well, there you go. There's all the possible views you could have on Logan. There's the positive view from me, the middle ground view from James, and the whatever view you want to call it from Daniel.
Hey, what were we talking about? Moving on view?
Trailer takedown. First trailer.
Apparently, there's a movie, a company releasing a Little Mermaid movie, but it's not Disney. What did you guys think of this trailer?
I was confused. I kept wondering. I was like, when is it, when are we getting to the gizmos and gidgets, and where's Flounder? I miss Sebastian. I was so wildly confused as to what the hell was going on. I knew The Little Mermaid wasn't an exclusively Disney story, but I didn't expect someone to beat Disney to the live action movie punch of Little Mermaid. So, also, it seems kind of dumb, like a dumb story, but it seems like a story that is wildly confused in what it wants to be, at least from the trailer, and that's why I didn't particularly enjoy it. But
yeah, I'm similar to you.
Yeah, sorry.
I was just going to say, I'm similar to you that I knew there was another story, but I didn't know, like, she was a circus freak or whatever.
All I kept thinking originally, because I thought this was Disney, was like, oh, they're taking this in a weird direction. They're setting up a lot of story to get to the prince and the seagull.
That's funny. James?
Yeah.
Yeah. Who made this movie? Was this ABC Family? Because they have this uncanny ability to just suck the life out of, like, the... I don't know the movie word for it, but just the appearance of the movie. Do you know what I'm talking? This seemed like ABC Family. It just looked like, oh my God, this is campy as shit, but somehow doesn't even have the appeal of a campy movie. It's sterile and campy at the same time. Yeah. They did that with fucking the Sword of Truth series. They tried to make it into a show on ABC Family. When I found out that that was a show, I'm like, holy shit. And I watched it, and it was exactly the same plot as the book, like to the letter, which would have been great, but they somehow just drained the life out of it. I don't know what they did. I want to find out so we can make a weapon out of it. It'd be pretty effective.
Yes, be particularly effective in... Middle East, where it's so drab already.
I'm trying to find the production company, but it's like well hidden. They apparently don't want to be associated with this.
They don't want to be held responsible.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Now I'm on the
tackle.
Yeah. Oh, it says by Conglomerate Media and Kingsway Production. So two fucking companies you've never heard of.
Great. Tackle.
Tackle.
James.
Tackle.
Tackle.
Yeah, and I will tackle this as well on moral grounds.
Tackle.
I feel like they're just trying to make a quick buck on the name before Disney launches their live-action version because they think people will be confused and think this is the live-action version, especially that they're putting it out at the same time, the trailer they're putting out at the same time the live-action Beauty and the Beast is coming out.
Yep. Fuck these people.
Second trailer.
Atomic Blonde is an action movie starring Charlize Theron, and I'm putting question marks in my voice because I'm not really sure what this movie is about. She seems to have a specific set of skills, and she has a blonde wig, and she kills people. No, they said that line in the trailer, and I was like, what the fuck? And that's the best summary I can make of this movie. And before you guys talk, I'm just going to say one thing. This is what I thought of this movie. Can we stop trying to make Charlize Theron an action hero? She was so inelegant in her movements. Like, if you watch Scarlett Johansson, the reason she works as an action star, even though she's a little shorter, is she's very elegant when she moves. And when I want to watch an action movie, it's almost like a dance, right? Like, when you watch good pro wrestling, you know it's fake, but it's like watching a choreographed dance if the people can move properly and move elegantly. Watching her in this movie fight, in this trailer fight, it was just so... It wasn't enjoyable to watch. It looked like she was struggling.
It looked to me like it was particularly stylized that way. Because I thought it was, it looked more naturalistic than many movies. So I thought it was supposed to be inelegant, but maybe it's just how terrible she is. I mean, compared to like Mila Jovovich, who is tremendous, a tremendous female action star.
Right. And those movies, the Resident Evil movies, are not good movies. But it's like watching the Fast and the Furious for the cars. Like, I can watch those Resident Evil movies to watch her fight because of how elegant she is.
Yeah. Or just watch The Fifth Element. But
yeah, that's true, too.
This is based on a graphic novel, not of the same name. It's called The Coldest City. And this guy who is directing this, or David Leitch, whatever, he co-directed John Wick. So that it has a similar style. This is, and I, what I was going to say is, this is, looks like the more naturalistic John Wick with a woman, is what it looks like. So I probably won't see it. My wife will see it 40 times probably.
Have you seen John Wick?
I've seen John Wick. John Wick is actually not bad. I haven't seen John Wick 2, which is at like 90% on Rotten Tomatoes as well. Weird. But John Wick is. You know what was interesting about John Wick is that the fighting was fairly innovative. They invented a style of gunfighting that they actually called Gun Fu, which they based on all of the old karate and samurai sword fighting movies, but they did it with a gun. So it's actually very cool to watch.
So now Keanu Reeves can say, I know Gun Fu.
That's right. That's right. So this is probably a light tackle for me. If it came on TV and I was too lazy to reach over for the remote and I already had a drink and a snack and I was just, you know, laying there, I'd be like, yeah, okay, I'll watch 20 minutes. But other than that, pass.
Tackle.
James?
This isn't offensive enough to even warrant a tackle, so I'm just nothing. It gets nothing. Just no.
All right,
I'll watch it.
Just give it silence.
I give it silence.
All right, well, I'll make up for that. I'm going to angrily tackle this. This movie trailer made me very angry. I was like, this makes me want to watch Ghost in the Shell and Scarlett Johansson on principle that this exists.
Tackle.
Yeah. What I immediately noticed is that she, you know, they talk about, oh, you have a certain set of skills. And in the opening scene of this trailer, she holds the gun like it's the first time she's ever held a gun. And I don't know, maybe it is, you know, but she received no training or direction on how to appear like an assassin. She just looked like a woman. Oh, hey, this is a gun. Wow.
Yeah that's part of the inelegance.
She was particularly terrible in that scene. I think Jason Bourne, James Bond, John Wick, or even Mila Jovovich in any movie would have taken out those two human beings in about 4 seconds, and it took her like a minute and a half, and she still got her ass beat.
Yeah.
Right.
I guess that's what you say with the more naturalistic. And while we're talking about things that are just stupid, we have to mention the pandering with the lesbian scene.
That's...
Yeah.
Well, there was the lesbian scene, which I think I... That's... Thank you for reminding me of the lesbian scene. That woman is in Kingsman.
Uh-huh.
Remember Kingsman? She plays the woman with the knife feet.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she's pretty good in that. And she looked pretty good in the lesbian scene. Not going to lie to you. Although Charlize Theron is not attractive to me. So.
No, she's not. Does not compare to the lesbian scene from Black Swan.
Which is the only thing that is even remotely interesting about the movie Black Swan.
Final trailer.
This last one's for you, Daniel.
Yay.
I put this in because I knew you'd want to rip on it. Geostorm. When the satellites that control the weather start controlling the world, we get a montage of destruction over some song.
Oh, speaking of song, sorry. Going to the last stupid trailer, Atomic Blonde. Best part about the trailer was it was a Queen song. In fact, the song was Killer Queen.
Yeah, and these two trailers.
Yeah. I love Queen.
If you go to themidside.com, watch these two trailers and you see how to use music and how not to use music in a trailer. How to use a pop song in a trailer and how not to use a pop song in a trailer.
Geostorm. Hard to tell if this is a global warming catastrophe movie in the sense that it's like when they, you know, I don't know. They're going to put global warming in it somehow is my bet. Or if it's just, and if they don't, it's going to be purely James's favorite trope, which is, in the future, we fuck up technology and it kills us because the future is horrible. And either way, I just like, go fuck yourselves. If we finally had a way to control the weather, of course there'd be accidents and bad things would happen, but nothing catastrophic on this level because we'd be really good at it. For instance, you could have made the same movie about airplanes. Oh, if we're going to ever perfect airplanes, we'll have 10,000 airplanes in the sky at any given moment. You know, suddenly one day our airplane system will fail and all of them will fall to the ground or crash into each other, and it never happens. Never happens. It's one of the most safe methods of transportation ever devised in the history of humankind, even safer than riding a donkey, which more people are killed on annually than who are killed in plane crashes. So... Technology is awesome. Go fuck yourselves, people who made Geostorm. Not only tackle, but while it's on the ground, kick it in the groin.
Tackle!
I did like the shot of the plane falling out of the sky while you're looking up at it, though. I thought that was a cool shot.
I'm sick of that. They've been doing that shot of planes falling out of the sky for years. That's not new. They did that in the show Revolution that lasted hopefully just 2 episodes that I didn't watch.
No, that got at least a season, dude. That might have got multiple seasons.
I don't care. Just, no. I can't help when I see that scene. I can't help but feel like, oh my God, it's so cool that that plane's coming down. Like, it's that fucking little kid while you're trying to play with your Legos. He just wants to, like, oh, and then, like, you find out that, you know, it's an evil Lego and then he smashes it. Like, he's that kid. He's that fucking little kid.
Yeah, dude. Revolution got 2 seasons and 42 episodes.
Jesus.
Fuck.
Terrible. The guy who directed this directed Independence Day, right?
It said produced. I don't think it's the same director. Oh. I don't know who's directing this.
It felt very similar to Independence Day, actually.
Yeah, well, I mean, people underplay the importance producers have on a movie. They don't realize how important they are. You know, there's the producers who just give money, like Steve McKinnon. But then there's the producers like, I mean, we saw Christopher Nolan's influence on Man of Steel. So...
Munchenin,
whatever the fuck his name is, the Trump guy.
Mnuchin,
whatever.
Mnuchin.
I don't know how to say his name.
This is Munchin. Dr. Spaceman. Yeah.
And you know what else I don't know? I don't know what? The name of this thing, but dude, this thing I found this week, I think I actually heard about it through Midsider Katrina, this Russian reality show that's casting. The organizers of the reality program, filmed on a remote Siberian island, say they will not intervene to stop rape and murder as the series got the go-ahead to start in July. Contestants armed with only knives will have to fight bears, wolves, and endure vicious gnats during a 9-month hell on the Ob River. What the fuck? Like, holy shit!
Welcome to Russia.
Like, our survivors, like, we say mean things to each other. Like, they fight bears.
This is an interesting question about politics and a libertarian world versus maybe an objectivist world. You can both weigh on. And it's like, in a culture, in a society that is completely laissez-faire, completely free, the government only enforces contracts, et cetera, et cetera. Is this something that could actually be allowed to happen? I.e. that you could sign a contract that says, I'm okay with potentially being raped and murdered on a television show in return for large sums of money.
We've gone full IHS conference bull session yes. at this point. This yes. is exactly like, I've had 60 conversations exactly like this one. Let's do it.
I mean, I don't care. I think fine, whatever. If people want to sign contracts and say that, let them do whatever the fuck they want. Like, whatever. I mean, that's probably not the most philosophically informed position, but...
Because the difficulty to me is, like, how would you enforce that contract? It's like, you won't allow yourself to be killed so the government could potentially kill you for not... Because we have to enforce the contract? Like... It seems contradictory or something. I don't know.
I mean, I think the way in which it's contradictory is that this, if you had a libertarian culture or an objectivist culture that would actually achieve liberty, this type of shit, people wouldn't want to sign up for this type of shit. There'd be no market for it.
This is potentially true. Yeah.
You underestimate stupid people.
Also, Russia will still exist.
Yeah, sure. There's always going to be stupid people are going to exist, but there isn't going to be a cultural drive towards, like, let's watch stupid people do stupid things. Like, that wouldn't be a marketable product.
I mean, were we really that far away with Jackass?
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, but you got to remember Jackass occurred after the 1960s in the Western world.
See, I you know, so and after James Kant. Not that this is the paragon of, you know, an objectivist culture, but it's certainly a more free one. In the West, during the gold rush, people used to make money watching other people eat wild tomatoes and betting on whether or not they would die.
Yeah, but people were fucking savages back then. We're not savages anymore. We just, you know, we just are kind of, we're like, you wouldn't see that marketed as high culture to the entire country. That's a bunch of hicks who have nothing better to do because they are dying of boredom. They need something to do.
All right, I'm going to push back a little bit culturally. And I think this is shown through the success of things like the NFL, and it traces all the way back to the gladiators in Rome. Is if your culture is moving less towards physicality and there's less violence, there needs to be some sort of outlet for those kind of things. It's a part of human nature. Physicality and physical confrontation are a part of human nature. And if you don't have that for the culture to have a release, it needs to be somewhere. So I do think it's a valid part of the culture. I don't know if it would be this extreme, but there's a reason the NFL is as successful as it is.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, look, the gladiatorial fights, I think within their cultural context, were completely appropriate. I mean, it's completely barbaric by today's standards, but we've moved past that, and now we have a physical competition that doesn't involve death. the only reason we're seeing this, like, is the only reason you'd ever see this in, like, a libertarian style society is if there was some kind of major regression is my only point. It doesn't seem to fit with my view of what a rational society would look like.
All right, James, thank you for rejecting the premise of the question and refusing to answer what I asked about whether or not it should be allowed in a political society that is free. But sorry, we can move on now.
Yeah, we had an interesting discussion though about entertainment and everything. And talking about people, you know, like throwing shit and attacking each other in like outlets that probably wouldn't exist in a rational culture. It's time for Reddit on Reddit.
These things are all on Reddit. Mostly pics of felines, comma, boring felines. These things are all on Reddit. No, we didn't post it, but we will repost it.
First Reddit. What's happening in the parallel universe where Hillary won?
Nothing, because it doesn't exist. It's not a thing.
Well, now you're rejecting questions?
That's the parallel universe I still live in. As far as I'm concerned, Obama is still president. Whenever I hear the news, whenever I turn on the news every day and hear about what Donald Trump is doing, I basically just, oh yeah, that's that parallel universe in which Donald Trump won. It's a good thing, like, I still feel like I live in the Hillary universe.
Yes.
I just assume she's just still up there doing the same shit Obama was doing. It's just basically how I feel at this point.
In the parallel universe where Hillary won, we've had fewer late night jokes about the president. We've had basically no talk about Russia other than if we're going to go to war with them. The Republicans still presented their terrible version of their quote unquote fix for Obamacare, except now that it has a chance of being signed into law and we'll all be more screwed than we were before. And other than that, instead of listening to the ridiculous, nonsensical non sequitur antics of President Trump, we'd be listening to the droning, bitchy, pejorative speeches of Hillary Clinton. So not a lot would change. I think it'd be a lot less ripe for cultural weirdness. But other than that, nothing.
Would we have all the protests we've been having?
No, certainly not.
So we wouldn't have a day without women, so a day without women with a woman president?
Yeah, right. Hmm.
Yes.
Would we have had a day without men?
No. Because that's, you know, because we have to work. We have to pay for the women to have the day without women. So.
So basically the main difference is, like, the left wouldn't be losing its mind.
Yeah. What's happening in the parallel universe where Hillary won? I think the best answer is was on the Reddit thread, which is you'd be making a thread asking about the parallel universe where Trump won.
Yeah, I liked that too.
There's so much smartness in that answer, actually, that it encompasses just about everything we talk about here at the Midside.
Yeah. All right. Want to hit the last Reddit?
Last Reddit.
Wow, that was mean. What to say in the elevator full of people? By the way, I love the fact that this question says the elevator full of people, as if there's one elevator full of people.
The national elevator full of people.
Right. It's not like an elevator full of people. It's like there's a place you go to in DC where it's like the elevator full of people.
Yeah. The elevator full of people is on the National Mall. Yeah. Okay. Nothing. Why are you talking in an elevator? Stop it.
There were some funny ones here.
Yeah.
You're probably wondering why I gathered you all here.
That's a James thing to say.
Yeah.
This reminds me of a prank my friends and I would pull at the mall to people because we were bored teenagers with nothing better to do. We would stand in the elevator, and when a single person would come into the elevator, I'd look them dead in the eye really aggressively and say, "What floor do you want?" And they'd be like really taken aback. They'd be like, two. And I'd like really passive aggressively punch number two. And then me and my three friends would look at the guy sourly until he noticed everyone was looking at him. Then each of us in turn would turn around, face a corner, and then just put our heads into that corner of the elevator like we're shunning them until we got to the floor. And then they would just awkwardly walk out.
Bored is correct. Wow.
Wow. Man, I deal a lot with full elevators now at the where I go to the gym because they just also put in the House of Blues over there. And I usually like park on like the third floor, or like the gym is on the bottom floor and the elevator or the House of Blues is on the fourth floor. The number of people who get in the elevator going the wrong way is ridiculous. I'll be like, I'm on the third floor. I'll be like, I'm going down. And they'll get in and they'll be like, oh, we wanted to go to the fourth floor. It's like, I fucking told you it was going down and the elevator says down. Like, what is going on right now?
Hmm. But take the stairs, badass.
Yeah, that's me? Or them?
I was like, that's offensive. I'll let you interpret that as you will.
Yeah, that's offensive. But yeah, mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, I usually don't talk in elevators and it's kind of weird when people do, so... Why do you think
that
is?
I have this double thing where it's like, one, don't talk in elevators. And two, I have earbuds in almost at all times when I'm outside of my home. Don't talk to me. They should be there. It is the universal symbol of, I don't want to be fucking bothered. Leave me alone.
Things you can do when you're married.
I'm also have earbuds in all day at work. So, alas.
What did we learn this trip? Daniel?
I learned that, you know, the people I buy snack food from are going to start checking out my Snapchat to see if I'm saying things they disagree with so that they can kick me off of their list and publicly shame me. And this is a terrifying, weird 1984-esque future run by the Pussy Comitatus.
James,
I learned about the Pussy Comitatus. I did not know that that was a thing.
Yeah, good times. Justin, what'd you learn?
That was my answer too. Yeah, I mean, it's the pussy come on your tatas.
Yeah, we learned about that.
Absolutely. Well, whatever you learned this week, you can share it with us on social medias. Everywhere, we're everywhere, and we're not gonna cut you off. If you say something stupid on Twitter at the midside, it's not like we're gonna like retweet and be like, oh, look at this fucker, he's banned from the midside for life. No, in fact, you get a lifetime membership.
I will retweet you though and say, look at this fucker, I just won't block you or ban you.
Right. Yeah, even if it's something we disagree with, lifetime membership here in the midside, because we believe in open, honest, robust debate. That's right. So at the Midside on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, and of course themidside.com/podcast, where you can listen to all of the episodes of the Midside going back pretty darn far. I don't know how those go back, but years certainly, right, Justin?
Yeah, this is our fifth year, so they got to go back at least 4 years on iTunes, right?
Yeah. Well, not on iTunes, but on the website. iTunes cuts you off at like the most recent 20 or something like that, which is why I say if you want to listen to like way back when, you got to go to midside.com/podcast.
I didn't know iTunes did that.
Yeah, indeed. I think you have to have a special setting for it not to do that, because otherwise you're paying for a bunch of bandwidth.
Oh, so well, on the website only goes back a couple years. Maybe it's 3 years, because I only started the website like 3 years ago, I think.
That's years. We got that. And then, of course, iTunes, while you're there subscribing, you can give us a 5-star review. We love the 5-starers. That's one less than 6 stars and one more than 4, in case you're keeping track at home.
Give us 5 stars like a binder.
That's right. Like a trapper keeper. Is that a thing? That was a thing,
yes.
Right?
From our childhood? That was the reference I was making, yes.
But you said
binder. Did you see that episode? Well, they made a whole bunch of school supplies.
Did they make pencils?
Yes. Did you see the Trapper Keeper episode of... I don't know every product 5-star made.
Did they make the erasers that go on the eraser of your pencil?
Yes, okay. They also made the erasers that go on your dick, which is called a condom. I don't fucking know.
Did they make protractors? Slide rules? I could go on and on about office supplies and school supplies. You just got me on a roll. That's all I'm.
An eraser that goes on your dick.
Eraser dick. And then of course there's Patreon, patreon.com/themidside. We love Patreon. For the uninitiated, Patreon is a website that allows you to help us get funded, and you have agreed to give us money for every piece of content that we provide, which is a cool way to do it. It's not a monthly subscription. It's not, you pay us like the gym and then never go. No. You pay us when you get the content that you want. And in fact, there is some Patreon exclusive content, one already in the can about the Academy Awards this year, and then some coming up. So be on the lookout for that. So that's patreon.com/themidside. We really appreciate that. Shout out to the liberty.me folks for syndicating us on their network. Love the libertarians. And yeah, thanks so much. We will see you next time after you have told a friend. We're not coming back next week unless you, personally, listener, yes, you, tell a friend. You do that, we'll come back. You don't do that, we won't be here next week. That's a promise. So
this concludes your journey into the midside. I'm Justin M. Wisniewski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Yeah!